This is the Live Feed. It's your connection to live music and entertainment in Winona. Support for this program is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Today on the Live Feed, we have an incredible interview via phone with Pepe Willie of the band 94 East, right here in Minnesota. Pepe has worked and collaborated with many musicians over the years. His uncle, Clarence Collins, an original member of Little Anthony and the Imperials, was the spearhead for Pepe to begin his music career. Today we will learn what brought Pepe from New York to Minneapolis, his involvement in what is known as the Minneapolis Sound, his history recording with Prince, involvement in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and we'll also get to hear some previously unreleased tracks featuring Prince on guitar. It's all on the Live Feed. You are listening to the Live Feed on KQAL. I am your host, Terry Tensis, joined with Doug Westerman, and we are talking to Pepe Willie today. Pepe, you're...
Hey, folks.
Hi. Pepe, you're about to actually be put into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, correct?
Well, yeah, we got five songs that are going into the new library. They're building the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is building a new library. It's going to be completed in May 2011. And the five songs that I recorded with my band 94 East back in 1975, and Prince was one of the members at that time, and we went in the studio and recorded these five songs. And now, you know, I'm friends with the CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and my uncle, Clarence Collins of Little Anthony and the Imperials, just got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last year. And I met, you know, a few board members and people, and I started telling them my story. And it was going like, what? Let me hear these songs. So we definitely donated these songs to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's official. You know, they sent us back an official letter and everything. And I think it's quite an honor. It's the first time that Prince was ever in the recording studio. It's his first time in a recording studio.
And he was like 15 or 17 at that time?
He was like 16, going on 17 years old. It was before anything. I mean, he didn't even know how to write songs when I met him. I mean, they were writing songs, but they weren't in the right construction.
He was like going to Bryan Junior High School, wasn't he?
Yes, he went to Bryan. Yeah, I worked over at Bryan. Prince went to Central.
Mm-hmm.
He, him and Andre Simone and Morris Day, these guys were in the same band. Morris, he had a seven-piece drum set, and they only played three drums. I mean, he was hilarious. No, I said, okay, play me one of your songs. And they start playing and singing, and then all of a sudden they jamming for like 20 minutes. And I'm going like, well, wait a minute, hold up. I said, you know, what's the name of the song? I said, I forgot already. You guys are jamming. I said, you got to have better construction. You know, you got to have an intro. You got to have a verse. You got to have the hook, another verse, a hook, a bridge, and, you know, go out and stuff. So we went on song construction mode, and I started teaching these guys the various forms of writing, you know, lyrics. Also, they sang the wrong words. You know, if Andre wrote this song, You Remind Me of Me. Everybody else was singing something different. You remind me of he, you remind me of she, you know, it was totally different. And so we made them put down all their instruments, and we wrote the lyrics on the blackboard, and this is when these guys really started to learn about the business of music and how to go about it, you know, to be more successful. You know?
And there was no way for you to know that you were going to have that kind of purpose in your life to teach these young musicians and what they would become, was there?
You know, you're absolutely right. I did not know. All I knew that background in music that I had was going to help these guys in any way that they, you know, that I could. You know, just working with them, I found out that Prince was unique because he was going over to Andre's sister who was playing keyboards, Linda, and he would go over to her, and I'm looking at him, and I'm going like, what is this guy going to do? You know, yeah, I'm from the East Coast. I'm from New York. So, so he goes over to the keyboard, and he goes like, hey, this is what I want you to play. And and I said, oh, wow, you know, look at this guy. Then he goes over to Andre, and he says, let me hold your bass. He takes the bass, and he says, Andre, this is what I want you to play. And then he starts playing it. You know, and before he even finished playing, Andre says, I know exactly what you want. You know, Andre picked up the bass, took the bass back from him, and started playing exactly what Prince ordered. You know, I mean, Andre and Prince were equal in talent as far as musicianship, bass, guitar, drums, keyboards, you know, but Prince was really shining. Besides, I was married to his cousin, so I had to take him first. You know, so I asked him, I said, yo, man, you know, you got to play with me, man. You know, I'm in the studio right now, and you need to, you know, come and do a couple sessions with me and stuff. And he was going like, oh, okay, how do we do it? I said, well, first of all, we're going to take you down to the Musicians Union and get you signed up. Because I was teaching these guys all about the business, so there's no way in the world I was going to take them into the studio and not pay them.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right. Good
you know?
Job so number one, get paid.
That's right. That's it. Because yeah, all they cared about was getting on stage. That's all they cared about. I want to be on stage, man. You know? And I was going like, nah, man, you got to get paid, man. You know, this is how it works. So we went in the studio. We rehearsed, you know, for like a couple weeks before we went in. When we went in, we had 4 hours because we didn't have a lot of money. I mean, studio time at that time was like $100 an hour.
Mm.
And I had already established my business with the studio, Cookhouse Recording Studios, at that time. And I knew they didn't believe me when I first walked in there, and I started just talking to some of the people. And I was going like, yeah, my uncle's with Little Anthony and the Imperials. And they were going like, yeah. You know? But, you know, I kept coming back every weekend because I was working two jobs. And I worked at Bryan Junior High School as assistant teacher and also at the United States Post Office to earn money to record with. Just kept going back and forth to the studio. And then I went in by myself with just guitar and vocals and paid the bill. And they was going like, hey, this guy is really serious, you know. And then I started bringing other band members in, and then the rest is history. It was a wonderful thing. And, you know, I mean, what else could keep me in Minneapolis? And I'm from New York.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. And I knew at that time that it was, you know, like a Motown, you know what I'm saying?
The sound.
Like, you know, yeah, it was like a Motown. You know, I knew that that was going to happen there. I'm going to stay here for a while. Started working with Prince, and then Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis came into play, and I assisted these guys in consultation. They were like 17 years old. I was the oldest kid on the block. I mean, I was 25. These guys were, you know. Matter of fact, Prince didn't even have a driver's license. We had to drive him around everywhere we had to go, you know. It was kind of, it reminded us of the Little Rascals. It was kind of like that.
Now that you got a chance to hear Pepe talk about the Cookhouse 5 and the original 1975 session featuring Prince on guitar, we're going to take a listen to a couple of tracks from the recordings themselves. We're going to start off with If We Don't, followed by I'll Always Love You.
I'm
We now return to our interview with Pepe Willie, where we discuss New York and how it shaped him as a musician, the importance of the music business, and what he learned, music being a family affair, the band 94 East, and the evolution of the Minneapolis sound.
Can we talk about New York? You grew up out there, correct?
Yes.
Can we talk about growing up there and how that shaped you as a musician?
That was awesome.
Okay.
When I was 10 years old, I found out that my uncle was part of Little Anthony and the Imperials. He was 17. I'm looking at him, and I'm going like, wow. And he was a very snotty guy, you know, my uncle. I love him to death now. I mean, but then I was a little kid. I was going like, you sing with Little Anthony and Imperials? And he was like, yeah, I sing with Little Anthony and Imperials. You know, I was very sarcastic, 17-year-old, you know, during that time. When he said that, I knew exactly that I wanted to be in this business. I knew it right then and there. About 5 years later, they had these shows, the rock and roll shows, at the Brooklyn Fox Theater that Murray Decay used to give. And he had all the stars there. They had the Miracles, the Temptations, the original Temptations with Eddie Kendricks and David Ruffin, Patti LaBelle, the Bluebells, Dionne Warwick, Wayne Newton when he was 18. You know, Timmy Euro, Four Tops. I went to store for these guys, Ray Charles. I was going back and forth, up and down the stairs, knocking on the dressing room doors, asking the artists if they want anything from the store. And I was getting them hamburgers and cheesecakes and eggs. And, you know, I mean, can you imagine all of these people on the same show?
No.
I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, that has never been done ever again in the history of this music. That's where I learned all my business tactics from, hanging around these guys and going to the store and listening to their conversations that they would have. Matter of fact, we used to go to business meetings, and I couldn't even say nothing. I would ask a question, and say, Pepe, shut up and listen, you know? And that's all I could do. So I just listen.
In any of your young career, did you play at the Apollo Theater then in New York or not?
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, me and my ex-wife, Chantel, Prince's cousin, spent the night at the Apollo because the Imperials were playing there. And the dressing room door wouldn't lock. So they didn't want to leave their uniforms up in there. So we had to stay there overnight, and it was scary. You're talking, all the lights is out and it's dark and you're in this theater. And had her there with me, so if anybody get me, they get her too. So it was such fun, just doing that with those guys. And it was only on Christmas time, Thanksgiving time, and Easter time, because that's when the kids got 10 days off from school.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have these rock and roll shows. Every time Lou Anthony Imperials was there, boom, I was right there. I was the only 16-year-old dude. I had $100 in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I found out from my mom, because I was going to write a book doing the history on the family, and I was going like, man, how did all of this happen? Did I just luck up on this, or am I just taking after my uncle, or what? But my mom told me that her father was a piano player. Her mom was a singer. And I said, oh, wow, I didn't even know that. And I knew my mom has a great voice. She always singing in the kitchen, cooking and stuff like that. Singing, Dinah Washington and legendary jazz singers. I found out that my aunt went to school with Miles Davis.
What?
Out in New York. Now, Miles Davis used to go to my grandfather's house and jam with my grandfather and my grandmother singing. This is before I was born. And I'm going like, what? So I'm getting all this information. And then my other aunt, my mom's sister, sang with Etta James when she had a girl group. So now I know that it's family orientated. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then my uncle, he had hooked me up and got me started in the business, and then my sister has some kids, and I hooked them up in the business. My nephew Keith, he's been in Stomp. I know you guys heard of Stomp.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been in Stomp for like 14 years. Done the movie with them. They won Best Sound and Best Picture for the Giant Screen Association. He's got a hip-hop group with his brother and his best friend G called Hydra. and we're getting ready to put a record out on these guys. And also his son, my great-nephew, is Kasim Middleton, who was a guitar player for the Naked Brothers Band on TV for 3 years when he was 10.
All in the family.
I mean, is there anybody? Is there anybody in your family who's an accountant?
Yeah.
My girlfriend's an accountant.
That's a wise move.
We're going to try to do a movie, try to do a film. We're going to try to get this done. The title of it is probably going to be From Brooklyn to Minneapolis, and it's going to talk about the times that I spent in New York and learning the business and then going to Minneapolis and teaching Prince, Andre, and Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and all these guys the business. Sometimes I think about it and I go, like, what if I didn't come here? What would have happened?
Right.
You know, you never know. One door opens, another one closes. It's a great ride. I love it. I love this business. I can't see myself doing anything else. All the people that are into this business are artists. It's an educational situation here because you got your young hip-hoppers and everything like that, and they have to go back and find out, you know, where it all came from. They have to. You know, they have to be a student of this business. They have to know that Ray Charles, Chuck Berry, all of these guys, how they suffered. I mean, it wasn't an easy thing for them. And it's easier now for us because, you know, we can have our own labels. We got all this technology. We can go into any music store and buy all this equipment and come home and press up CDs, make your own label, put the record out. I mean, we can do all this now. But before, artists were starving. They was out there on the road starving. They called the Chitlin Circuit and wasn't making no money. You know, it was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And a matter of fact, Anthony from Anthony and Imperials told me this great story. I'll try to make it short, but Pearl Bailey, this great singer and actress, was on tour with them, and she liked one of the guys from another group, and she was the only smart one. She had a hot plate in the hotel, and she was cooking food and selling it to the artists.
There you go.
So she was making all kinds of cash. So she told Anthony, she says, well, if you go over there and you tell Tony to come and feed me, you know what I'm saying, I'll feed you for a week for free. So Anthony's starving, you know, he's running over there. Hey, man, Tony, man, come on, man, you know. And Tony goes like, nah, man, I'm not interested in her. I'm sorry. So then Anthony said, but, man, she said she was going to feed me for a week. You know, I'm hungry, man, you know. And dude said, nope, sorry, can't do it, you know. He went back to Pearl Bailey, says, nah, man, sorry, baby. And she didn't feed him. She did not feed him. So they took up a collection, the rest of the Imperials, and got some money up and bought him sardines and crackers.
I got a question for you, because you were talking about you're teaching people and shaping and then showing people the business. What is it you've learned from the people that you teach?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Nobody's ever taught. You know, asked me that question, but from Prince specifically, when I went to Minneapolis, I was a drummer. And I played a little bit of guitar. And then watching Prince and hanging out with him for so long and seeing him, you know, playing all these instruments, then I started playing all these instruments. I started playing bass. I started playing keyboards. You know what I'm saying? So, and that's what I learned, to play multiple instruments. That's the main thing that I learned from Prince. These other artists, what I learned from them is that they have talent. They are very creative. And it pushes me, it keeps me on my toes, because when I hear stuff that they've written or they recorded and I'm critiquing it and I'm going like, wow, this is really good. There's a lot of talent out there. They just need the guidance. That's all that it is. And that's why I'm doing what I do, to help guide these artists so that they can obtain more success. That's what I learned. I learned to just keep going. You know, don't give up, because I'm telling them that all the time. I'm telling them. And if somebody's telling you can't, you got to tell yourself that you can. Find out where your strengths are. Find out what your weaknesses are. And in turn, I find out what my strengths and my weaknesses are, you know? It's kind of like when I talk to them, I'm talking to me. Even when I'm just talking to you, I'm learning stuff. And at one time, it was very difficult because there was nobody that I could lean on. Everybody was coming to me for answers. You know, Peppy, what's this? Peppy, what's that? And then this, how can I do this? I give them these answers and I tell them, you know, all this stuff. But when I had questions, you know, who could I go to? There was nobody there. I called my uncle. My uncle, he knew some things, but he didn't know everything that I needed to know. And then we got friends with other people in the business, and now I have a wealth of people out there that has a wealth of information, and I can get any musical question, business, answered anywhere, you know, anything. So we tell our artists and our clients that we consult that if you have 1,000 questions about this music business, we expect for you to write them down on a piece of paper, and then when you come to see us, we're going to answer all those questions. Hmm. You know,
your surroundings in New York and what you grew up and how you were introduced to the business. I would imagine 94 East is in reference to the highway that took you from New York to Minneapolis. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, so then I guess the question is why? Why did you leave that breeding ground, so to speak, of great music, and what brought you to Minneapolis?
Well, Prince's cousin, she was beautiful, man. If you're a girl with green eyes, a sister with green eyes, I said, oh, man, she's my girl.
You know, they say honesty is your best policy.
What happened was Sammy Strand, who's a member of the Atlantean Imperials, he also sang with the OJs for like 12 or 13 years when one of the OJs had died. He went and took his place for a while. But Sammy, we were at the Copacabana. Lou Anthony Imperial was playing at the famous Copacabana in New York. And Sammy comes into the dressing room, and he goes like, hey, man, who's that fine girl out there with the green eyes, man? And I never even seen her. And I said, oh, who? He said, yeah, some babe out there with green eyes. Do you know her? I said, yeah, that's my old lady, man. And I never even met her. I said, that's my girl. So
well played, Pepe.
So I had to with Sammy because he would have been on her like, you know. I mean, he was,
protect
you know, this guy
territory.
Is crazy. So then I had to run out there and meet her real quick. But my uncle was going out with her aunt. She came to visit her aunt from Minnesota. So I went out into the waiting room, and I said, hey, how you doing? You know, it's fine. I says, you are Kahlua's niece? And she goes, like, yeah. And I says, well, I'm Pepe, Clarence's nephew. And she goes, oh, hi, how you doing? I says, hey, you want to hang out tonight? You know, just, she goes, sure. And that's how we met. A few months down the road and stuff, we talked and stuff, and she told me about she had a cousin of hers who's interested into the music business, and his name was Prince. And I went like, oh, yeah. I said, okay. And matter of fact, me and Prince talked on the phone before I even met him personally. He was asking me questions about publishing. He was like 15 then. And I said, oh, you know, I'm coming up there. When I come up there, I'll, you know, get with you guys and talk to you some more. We had the greatest time ever, and I want people to live that. If I could tell the story and they can actually visualize it, because it was a great, great time, the beginning of the Minneapolis sound. It was a great, great time. Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis, Andre Simone, Prince, Alexander O'Neill, Sherelle. You know, I mean, it just goes on. Jesse Johnson came into play after a while. And just Ricky Peterson, great jazz pianist, and his family, the Peterson family. The Steels, a great gospel group out of Indiana, they came in there, and they did movies and stuff with Prince. And I mean, it was just unbelievable. Matter of fact, Prince is moving back to Minneapolis. He's building a home right where he tore down the other home.
Good idea. Paisley Park was looking a little worn.
Yes.
Was it sad for you to see Jimmy and Terry go back, or I should not go back? Was it sad to see Jimmy and Terry go to Los Angeles?
In one way, yes. In another way, no. One way, yes, because they weren't really doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't really helping the young artists in Minneapolis. They were more business-wise. They'd sign them up, wouldn't give them much. And my thing was to protect the artists. I didn't want them to get ripped off. I want them to get as much as they could. Even though they were a new artist, they still had some type of power where they can achieve a higher royalty rate than what the companies would give them because they're a new artist. So, you know, teaching them about going to a lawyer, finding out how to find music lawyers, music attorneys, and getting into the performance rights organizations like BMI and ASCAP, being a songwriter, becoming your own publisher, you know, all of these things that I was teaching these artists. That's what I was doing. And Jimmy and Terry weren't doing that. You know, and I didn't understand why, because my thing, when I learned it from Lou Anthony Imperials and other artists out from the East, they had said to me, Pepe, you take this knowledge that you have and you pass it along. Mm-hmm. You pass it on, and that's what you do. And with Prince and all these guys, I told them the same exact thing. How can I tell them anything less? And he had to tell them what I knew. And I said, man, this information that I'm giving you, you pass it on. You pass it on to the right people. And a lot of these guys just took the knowledge and kept it. And they wouldn't tell nobody. Mm. I didn't like that. You know, that's where it is. But when Jimmy and Terry left, I understood why they left, doing films and everything. They want to go where everything, where the work is. There wasn't a lot of people coming into Minneapolis and stuff, you know. My uncle asked me once, he says, Pepe, he says, how could you live in Minnesota? It's so cold. And I said, Clarence, I don't live outside, okay?
And then Prince himself has said, you know, when he's answered that same question, he says it keeps, you know, the cold keeps the criminals away.
Absolutely.
That's, yeah.
Absolutely. And see, and that's how I was able to build my company, because it wasn't a rat race.
Right.
Right.
Man, I mean, it was just wonderful. Nobody bothering you. You didn't have to try to get there before the next guy got there. You can hone in on your skills no matter what it was, no matter what business you were in, whether it was music or any other business, you know. Minnesota was that, is that type of place where you can raise kids and stuff in a great environment. You know, they got good schools and things. The people are friendly. I mean, every time I came out of my house in New York, it was like you had to wear body armor. You know, you know. I mean, come on. You get in your car and you're arguing with somebody 5 minutes soon you're driving down the street. They're yelling at you because you hit their car or almost hit their car, or you're pulled out and they're mad and everybody's angry and uptight and stuff. I was so happy to get out of New York. It was unbelievable. Yeah, I love Minnesota. And, I've been in Minnesota longer than I've been in New York.
Yeah. So where in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame will your exhibit be, or your the?
Well, we're trying to get an exhibit going on, because I want to start an exhibit where people can come in and hear those songs, and then they can press a button, and all they would hear is Prince's guitar. And This is when he's at 16 years old. Hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Playing like that. There's artists right now, guitar players, who can't even play what he's played. You know, what he played back then. And this guy was just phenomenal. Still is. He's one of the greatest artists of our time. Gets to you a little bit. I know it's got to him a little bit. And I wish that I could see him more, to sit down and talk with him and let him know the friends that he has in this business, because we were there with him when he had nothing. He's out there now. Cool. I mean, we love him, and he's continually doing great. And, you know, we always wish him the best. Matter of fact, I'm the only guy out there that can use his name with mine.
Oh.
You know, legally. I'm the only one. 94 East featuring Prince. I'm the only one that can do that.
We're now going to go back to the Cookhouse 5 original 1975 session with 94 East featuring Prince. All the tracks on this release are being submitted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Library and Archives. We're going to listen to Games and Better Than You Think.
So fine, but you won't get trying to tell me indiscreet, yeah, that he's not the hurting kind. Oh, no, no, no. Thank you.
now going to jump back into our interview with Pepe and discuss the never-before-released tracks with Prince featured on them, 1015 and Fortune Teller, to round out our show tonight. You've been listening to The Live Feed.
Well, let's talk about the new release that you have.
The new one, 94 each, featuring 1015 and Fortune Teller with Prince on guitar, is one of my best CDs, I have to say. It's a CD that I always wanted to do, with nobody telling me what I had to write, how I had to write it. I did it my way, the way that I wanted it to get done.
Good.
We took 1015 and Fortune Teller. 1015 was written by me. Fortune Teller was written by Hank Cosby, who produced Stevie Wonder for Once in My Life and wrote My Sharia Moore with Stevie. He was one of our producers when we were signed with Polydor. We recorded 1015 and Fortune Teller at Sound 80 Recording Studios in Minneapolis. And Prince just happened to be in the studio at the time when we were going in. So he's looking at us going like, where are you going? I said, man, we're going to record our single. He says, what? I said, yeah, man. He said, can I play on it? I said, yeah, come on, man. So he had his guitar and, you know, he had just finished a demo. And he played on those songs. Now, all these books that are written about Prince, and they always mention 1015 and Fortune Teller, but nobody has ever heard them. So I had to go back to Polydor, because Polydor had let us go before the record even came out, which was very sad. Prince was more upset than I was, because me, Andre, and Prince went right back in the studio after that, and me and him wrote this one song called Just Another Sucker. We was in Sound 80, and we recorded 1015 and Fortune Teller. Prince was on there. So I updated it a little bit and put it on the new CD, and then I wrote a few more songs on the CD, and then my friend wrote a couple of songs for me, and we got a nice 12-song CD that's power-packed. Every song is different. You know, we didn't use the same instrumentation on any of the songs, different drum settings and everything for each song. No two songs sound alike. That was the CD that I always wanted to do, or album, whatever you want to call it. Because usually you get an album, you hear maybe two, at the most, three good songs on the album, and the rest of them are just fillers. But each one of our songs is a hit. It took me years to do it. I just absolutely love it. I appreciate you guys giving me this time. And, you know, I just want to mention that Marcy and Christy, my two cohorts in crime, two singers and business partners, you know, I couldn't have done any of this without them,
cool.
Any of it. They work so hard. They do a lot of the administrative stuff. They do all the hard work. And I do the music, and that comes easy for me.
Cool.
And,
yeah, she's yelling at me now. Yeah, no, that was Christy, by the way.
Hello to her.
These guys have been definitely awesome. Definitely awesome.
Great.
And, all right, Douglas, thank you so much. And Terry, thank you so much.
Not a problem. Take it easy, okay?
All right, you guys.
All right, later.
All right. Bye-bye.
We're going to go ahead and play the tracks that Pepe mentioned that have not been released before, featuring Prince off the new 94 East release. Here is 1015 and Fortune Teller. Thanks for joining us for The Live Feed.
Well, it's 12.
there's still no call from you, and I'm wondering, way back since 10, I don't want to be the kind of guy who teases, and I don't want to be no player, I don't want to be a whatever, babe, all I want to be is your loving man.
Baby, I want you to know I will never hurt you, no. You're the one for me, baby. I will give you everything, all the love my heart can bring. Oh, oh, what you mean to me.
I can't believe that you're not in my arms tonight.
Yo.
A big thank you to Pepe Willie for joining us today on the live feed and sharing with us those great recordings. Join us every Wednesday and Friday evening for another episode of The Live Feed.
Thanks for listening to The Live Feed. The Live Feed is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information on tonight's show, visit us at kqal.org.